Good morning. Welcome to the Message of Truth. My name is Keith Greer. I'm the local minister at the Harrodsburg Church of Christ, and I want to thank you for listening to our program this morning. We encourage you to check out our website, www.churchofchrist@harrodsburg.com. You'll find these radio podcasts there. You'll also find sermons and PowerPoints and a lot of good information that will be helpful to you in your study of God's Word. We encourage you to check it out and let us know what you think. We are studying the book of Revelation, a book that is greatly misunderstood and mistaught in our time and in our generation, by looking at the context of the book. In chapter number 13, we will meet two additional characters that are important to the drama that is being portrayed in this book. The beast coming out of the sea and another beast coming out of the earth. They will join the dragon and become his allies in making war against the saints of God. The dragon and the two beasts could constitute an unholy trinity that will be very important in the persecution of the Lamb's followers. In chapter 13, we begin by reading the first few verses. Then I stood on the sea, on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising out of the sea, having seven heads, 10 horns, and on the horns 10 crowns, and on the heads a blasphemous name. And the beast which I saw was like a leopard, feet was like the feet of a bear, and his mouth was like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave forth his power, his throne, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. So they worshipped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" And he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and was given authority to continue for 42 months. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemies against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. And it was granted him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. In this particular chapter, we see again some additional enemies of the saints. Forces of evil as terrible beasts. Somehow they seem to be in control, yet for only a temporary period of time. Terrible picture for the saints who are on the earth suffering at the hands of Rome at this time. The dragon and the beast. The beast was the agent for the dragon. The beast is also pictured in Daniel chapter 7. This tells us it's the time of the fourth world empire, which we know to be Rome. Who will make war with him? He was making war with the saints. Who was going to overcome him? Who was going to oppose him? The servants of those who would be with the beast are those who are pictured not in the book of life, and we will read that in just a moment. Satan is ultimately behind every lie that is told, every immoral deed that's done, and every opposition to righteousness. In the present day situation, we face both the Lamb and the Dragon operating through human agencies exclusively. In the first century of the Christian era, angels made earthly visitation, demon possession occurred, and battles were fought with supernatural and miraculous powers given to men. God is not raising the dead today, and Satan is not possessing individuals against their will. No, it's much simpler and closer to home than such theories that would lead one to believe today. The battle for human souls is being fought through human agencies rather than between angels and demons on earth. To the degree that any one of us loves and pursues righteousness, he or she is an agent of God. To the degree that one follows error and practices sin, he is the pawn of the devil. The emperors of Rome did not have supernatural powers. They did claim such powers, as we will see later in this apocalyptic book. They had lies, coercion, physical force, bribes, and other seductions to involve people in unholy things and the unholy things of Satan. The devil's happy to trust his work on earth to such people, for he knows they will use all their power for his sake to deceive the people and to get them to worship the beast. One of the most arresting and frightening things about this beast from the sea is its wound that is on its head, which looks severe enough to have killed him, but that he recovered from in verse 3. The Roman Senate in 68 AD had condemned Nero to death because he had been so hated among the populace in the last several years of his rule. There was great rejoicing when the word came that he had finally died and he was really dead. But soon the rumor began to circulate that he was not really dead, that he was pushed off in Parthia, forming an army and would come against Rome to punish the empire for its repudiation of him. By the end of the first century, the notion that Nero was still alive had faded. It was replaced by the more ridiculous fear among many that he would return from the dead to lead the armies against Rome. Of course, that was all just figurative and the imaginations of men. We understand that this fight is going to be against the remnant of the children, of the child, and the faithful remnant of the offspring, and that's Christians and the church. And who is she going to fight against, and who's going to be victorious? Look at verse number 8. All who dwell on the earth will worship him. Those who will worship the beast, who will they be? Well, I'll tell you who they won't be, whose names have not been written in the book of life and of the Lamb slain before the foundation of the world. You remember, those who had been found in the book of life, those who had been sealed and protected by God, they would not worship the beast. But all the other people who were contrary to righteousness and opposed God and were adversaries of Satan and of his agent, the beast, they would willingly follow the beast because she was the world power. She was the one that was in charge, and therefore they would oppose anything that was righteous and anything that was right. And in verse 11, we're introduced to another beast. Then I saw another beast coming out of the earth, and he had two horns and a lamb, like a lamb, and spoke like a dragon. He exercised all the authority of the first beast in his presence, and caused the earth and all who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. He performed great signs, so that he made fire come down from heaven on the earth in sight of men. And he deceived those who dwell on the earth by those signs, which he was granted to do in the sight of beasts, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. Again, this beast would have been easily recognizable to those who lived during this time, because that's the beast of false religion, the emperor worship. The beast was going to encourage those who fell under her authority to deem the emperor as God and to introduce emperor worship. And those who would not fall and worship the beast or would worship him as God would be persecuted. And this happened not under Nero, but under Domitian. Under Domitian, he began to address himself as Lord God. He signed his documents, the official documents. He assigned him in that way. This is a clear reference to the count emperor worship that began under Domitian and would continue in various emperors of the Roman Empire. And this beast would cause men to tempt them to blaspheme God and to submit to that beast by accepting him as emperor and worshiping him as God. But God's people would remain uncommitted. They would stay committed to the Lamb, and they would stay committed to Christ. Therefore, they would be the obstacles, they would be the objects of the persecution of this beast. And in verse 15, he was granted over the power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many who would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Now, those who failed to worship the beast, who would not accept the emperor as God, would not bow to his image, would not announce and accept him as God, would be persecuted even to the death. Now, the first century Christians would well understand who this beast represented because they weren't doing what this beast was doing. He was causing and trying to get men to accept the emperor as God, with images of the emperor being placed all over Rome and demanding that they would be accepted as God and he would be accepted of God, but yet the faithful Christians, whose name was written in the book of life, would never ascend to accept Caesar as God. Therefore, they would be persecuted. There's probably been no passage in all the book of Revelation that receives more attention than verse 16 and verse 17. He caused all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand and on their forehead. And no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark of the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is the wisdom. Let him who understands calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. Many interpreters of the apocalypse attempted to decode 666 in order to arrive at some identification of a specific historical figure by means of decoding by assigning numerical values to the letters and adding to the letters together to derive at a number. We know, in fact, that this was rather a popular game in ancient times. But we are left to wonder why a letter would be written to Greek Christians in the Roman province Asia would resort to such a circuitorial kind of identification. How likely were the original readers to get the identification right? Others suggest the identification of the mystery 666 include Domitian, the Pope, Adolf Hitler, Mussolini, and on we could go. It's endless, the men who have been assigned being 666. So in light of the mania, so many modern-day interpreters of the apocalypse define a contemporary person in the events of the book, the following observation seems particularly appropriate here. Far too much has been made of the effort to attach 666 to a specific individual. Recall that in chapter 7, a marker seal was placed on the forehead of God's people to bind them with him, to place them under his authority and protection. Now in the chapter 13, a corresponding mark is placed on those who follow the emperor and look to him for protection by extending to him as being God. The mark of chapter 7 was not literal in nature and invisible to human eyes, and the mark not need to be thought of being different in nature in chapter 13. John says it's the number of a man, simply a man's number. Six falls short of perfection. Seven is the perfect number, raised anything to its third power. Thus, 666 is nothing more nor less than evil raised to its ultimate, evil to the nth degree. All those who put their trust in mankind generally, or any particular human being or human power, are opposed to God. That would fit those who were following Rome. They trust human wisdom, human strength, and human works. The saints of God trust only him and his wisdom, his power, and his working. This is the fundamental distinction between the lost and the saved of any generation in the history of the world. 666 was just a sign of those who were following the beast. Just like 666, like the sign of the beast of those who were following the emperor and emperor worship and following Rome, just like the seal that was on the Christian to denote that they were protected by God before they were being faithful and obedient to his cause. Such foolishness by men to try to make more out of this chapter than it is. All it is the beast and the false prophet, Rome and emperor worship was now being enacted upon Christians, and they would have victory, but only temporarily. We'll continue to see how eventually they will fall with the dragon. Tune in again next week.